Reeking yellow water swirling around his patched boots, Harold slogged through the sewer of the ville, a tiny candle in his cupped hands lighting the way. A voice inside his head said a major storm had to be raging for the river water to be this high, and the hunchback was forced to cover his face in an effort not to choke on the chemical stink. Even if the acid rains didn't reach the ville, the runoff from the mountains raised the level of the river until it flowed back into the normally dry sewers. Splashing in the wastewater, a rat scurried by, already dying from the diluted acid. There was no sewage down here. Alphaville saved its solid waste for the greenhouses. Counting the feeder pipes carefully, the hunchback reached the last familiar intersection. Here was where he usually turned left to reach the ruins. But not today. Patrika was dead, the deal was off, and he was going to claim his bride. A strange kind of cold anger was building within him, and he was eagerly looking forward to meeting anybody who tried to stop him. The previous day, Harold had reached the secret place where the old Baron used to hide blasters. Oddly, the basement of the skyscraper was completely deserted, not a mutie there. But the sergeant left the bundle of food for their young anyway, took what he went for, and departed again. The hunchback hoped his pets were okay. They were so innocent and shy. Two huge blasters rode heavy at his hips, and the rifle slung across his back was the biggest in the plastic trunk. Did he remember to release more argon gas into the trunk after he sealed the lid shut? He shook off the thoughts. It didn't matter now. Harold knew he probably wasn't going to survive this journey. But that was okay. He and Laura could be together in death. Reaching another intersection, the hunchback paused, waiting for the voices to tell where to go. He had never been in this section of the sewers before. It was forbidden for any to go down there. The penalty was 20 strokes, and owning a map of the sewers was punishable by death from the machine. The faint light of his candle displayed several side tunnels, extending out from a central pit. At the bottom was a main feeder pipe, and in a rush, he knew that was his destination. Moving fast along the pipe, he found more ladders leading into access shafts. The voices counted merrily until reaching number 14, then screamed at him to climb exactly here. Shivering under the chorus of commands, the hunchback obeyed meekly. A heavy iron grating blocked the top of the shaft. Harold quietly lifted the covering and gently set it aside as he climbed from the sewer. Standing, the hunchback saw he was in a storage room. Boxes and barrels stacked haphazardly about in careless abandon. Moving quietly to the door, he peeked through the keyhole and saw Jimmy in the next room brushing his teeth at a dirty sink, humming a tune. The voices had done it. This was the Gaudy House. The next part was his alone to complete. Lifting the door by the handle so the rusty hinges wouldn't squeak, Harold crept forward, and releasing the door, he drew the knife. A creak from the settling hinges caught the bouncer's attention, and as he turned, the hunchback charged and smashed the skinny man against the wall, knocking the breath from his lungs. Gasping for air, Jimmy desperately slashed at the brute with his straight razor, but Harold knocked that aside with a meaty arm and grabbed the bouncer by the throat. Jimmy left the floor kicking, his eyes bulging as if about to burst from his head. Jamming a hand into his pocket, the bouncer partially drew the homemade zip gun when something loud snapped in his neck. He trembled, then went completely limp, the razor dropping from twitching fingers. Squeezing some more, until he was sure the man was dead and not trying a trick, Harold laid the corpse on a filthy bunk in the corner and covered him with a thin blanket. Now drawing the .44 automag from his holster, Harold started up the dank wooden stairs to the first floor of the brothel, his face an inhuman mask carved for mice. Let the storm rage and thunder outside. This was his wedding day. Digging in their heels and shouldering the door to the shoe store open, Ryan and Christy burst onto the street. Instantly, the wind slammed the door shut, shattering the glass. The sandstorm invaded the shop ruthlessly, overturning displays and sending shoes flying madly about in a whirlwind. Sacrosanct for a century, it was now just another dead store amid the crumbling pre-dark city. Hunching over to walk against the fierce gusts, the companions started toward the destroyed skyscraper. The once mighty edifice had been reduced to a mere ironwork skeleton from the fires. but it still served as a landmark to direct them through the madness to the tunnel. Thunder rumbled in the murky sky as the quieting sandstorm still raged over the ruins, the winds howling along the barren streets, driving the sand before it with pounding fury. The windows of the building shook, and loose debris flashed by to disappear into the maelstrom. More than once, they found a dried splotch on a wall, marking where a lizard had braved the storm and had abruptly become part of the landscape. The pair was completely wrapped in strips of cloth, bleached to mottled colors to help blend into the storm. Desert camouflage. Their right hands were swaddled in lumpy balls of oily cloth. Even their faces were hidden behind overlapping layers, only their eyes showing through the narrowest of slits. The wind noticeably lessened as they moved to the lee of a bowling alley, and Ryan and Christy paused to examine a dead man embedded in the ground, his mouth packed solid with sand. The body was flayed to bones in spots from abrasion, and a smashed muzzleloader that lay nearby showed he was from Alphaville. Tightening their masks, the pair moved on. Suddenly, there was a tremendous crack, and a billboard flew by overhead, tumbling end over end as the winds tore it apart. As if renewed by the destruction, the storm rose in power until the whole world seemed on the verge of shattering. The pair was forced flat against the wall, helpless to take a step in any direction. Then the winds diminished, dropping to a soft breeze. The lightning and thunder also eased, then died away completely. For a few moments, the companions stood listening to the blood pound in their ears as they adjusted to the unexpected silence. Then the tempest returned, but not as strong as before. Ryan used a knuckle to rub the wind-blown grit from his eye.
Almost over!
Too fast! We need another hour!
We aren't getting it!
A single strand of her fiery hair flying free, Christy gestured onward with her cloth-wrapped hand when a figure walked around the corner of the building. The man was dressed in military fatigues, with a handkerchief covering his mouth and an M16 assault rifle in his grip. Instantly, Ryan raised his swaddled hand and fired, the silenced Sig Sauer coughing once inside the big shoebox, the rags outside muffling the noise to almost inaudible. But the wind shifted his aim, and the Sec man staggered, only wounded in the shoulder. Snarling in pain, he pointed the M16 and savagely pulled the trigger, with no result. The dirty autofire was hopelessly jammed. Lunging forward, Christy stabbed the Sec man with the stiletto knife in her free hand. Dropping the blaster, the Sec man fell backward, clutching his gushing throat. Kneeling, Ryan finished him with a slash of the panga. Reloading their blasters was impossible until out of the storm, so every bullet counted, which meant no mercy shots for the merely dying. Checking the body for any explosives, Christy found none, and the companions moved away from the site. Ryan lowered his arm, so the hot shell rolling about in the shoebox didn't rest on his bare skin.
Fire blast! We better watch that wind shear! I almost chilled the both of us with that!
Christy nudged him with an elbow.
Got you covered, lover!
He grunted in reply. No matter how good you were, mistakes happen to everybody. But mistakes got you chilled in the Deathlands. A few blocks later, the pair froze and retreated into a recessed doorway. Standing in the middle of an intersection and making no attempt to hide was a Sec man holding a bolt-action rifle, a towel tied across his mouth. His hair a wild frenzy, the red-faced guard bowed under the gusts of wind, but stayed right there, squinting against the dust and sand.
Perimeter guard.
Ryan's hand double-checked that the safety was off his blaster. Christy made sure her own Mac-11 was set on single shot.
We're close. Double-team him?
On the next upsurge. Check.
Lightning flashed, and the storm increased for a few moments, blinding the sentry completely. Covering his face with an arm, he rode out the buffeting until the wind eased. Dropping the arm, he recoiled as a mummy charged out of the dust clouds. He raised his blaster, and white-hot pain took him in the kidneys, then the throat. A terrible cold washed over the Sec man, and he dropped to the ground, pumping out blood. The dry soil absorbed the fluid on contact, the storm covering the crimson fluid and the dying man with ruthless efficiency. Systematically, the companions moved sideways along the picket of guards, traveling from man to man, until finally reaching where they started.
None of these men were large enough.
So, let's find more.
Two more guards were encountered and dispatched, along with a lieutenant found asleep in a telephone booth, before they reached the sloped ramp that led to the tunnel. Moving toward the embankment, the companions reach the tumbled entrance to the underground tunnel, the jagged pieces of concrete and twisted steel beams already partially buried under a softening blanket of sand. Four men struggle to haul away some of the smaller pieces of rubble, while a burly sergeant with an M16 wrapped in a sweater stood guard. That was the right idea, but it was nowhere near enough protection for the weapon against the billowing sandstorm. However, the scuba mask on the sergeant's face gave him an unobstructed view through the stinging dust clouds, and that was trouble. Quickly, tactics were discussed, then the companions moved. Approaching from the direction of the wind, Christie took out the sergeant first with a stiletto between the ribs, twisting the blade to enlarge the hole and deflate his lungs. No pressure meant no sound. Ryan grabbed the blaster to stop it from hitting the ground, as the sec men sighed out a warning and died. Laying the useless blaster aside, the man and woman simply walked behind each of the armed workers and shot them at point-blank range. Removing the jackets of the two largest men, Ryan and Christie bundled the garments into an empty bag and took refuge behind one of the searchlights. A few handfuls of sand rubbed out most of the blood spots. Trying the jackets on over the camo wrappings, Christie's fit perfectly in spite of her top-heavy figure. But Ryan's was too small in the shoulders, and he had to leave the jacket unbuttoned. Hopefully nobody would notice. Now, resembling sec men, they crawled out from behind the searchlight and studied the buildings on either side of the access ramp. Several windows were gone, probably from the concussion of the rockets. It also removed those places from the list of possible campsites for the Baron and his men. A liquor store with an iron grating over its front window seemed a good location, until they noticed a sandbag wall that closed off an alleyway, alongside a massive granite building on the corner. Boards covered the windows on both stories.
That's their base,
Ryan agreed.
Wags must be in the alley to cut the wind.
Just then, light flared inside the liquor store directly across the street from the bank. Then it was gone.
And there's the guard station. Some fool is smoking on duty.
Without a comment, Christie started to crawl that way, but he stopped her.
Wags first.
Rising, they darted across the street, hit the wall, and waited for a response. None came. But now they could faintly hear the strains of a badly played harmonica. Moving to the sandbags, they climbed over them to find a dozen vehicles draped with window curtains and carpeting. Christie stood guard while Ryan opened the gas cap of each vehicle and slid a thin block of C4 into the gas tank, the tiny timing pencil sticking out of the top like the wick on a candle. Crossing to the bank, Ryan stood guard while Christie dug a small hole in the sand in front of the front door, placed a wrapped package gingerly inside, then smoothed the sand again. This process was repeated four times as they crossed the street. Reaching the sidewalk, the companions straightened their jackets, boldly walked over, and knocked on the door to the liquor store. Nothing happened, so Ryan knocked harder to be heard over the gusting winds. There hadn't been any lightning for a while, and that was making the men anxious. If the storm died now, their attack would completely unravel. Without the masking effect of the dust clouds to hide them, this was a suicide mission.
Yeah, I'm coming.
The door swung aside, showing a sec man with a napkin around his throat and holding a can of spaghetti with a spoon sticking out.
What the fuck is it now, Sarge? Rotation ain't for another hour.
Thanks for the info.
The Sig Sauer coughed, and a hole appeared in the man's forehead. The corpse tumbled off to the side, and they pushed their way into the store. The wall shelves and refrigerated cases were empty, along with the racks and displays. Not a speck of food remained anywhere. Even the cash register was broken, apparently from a sledgehammer blow, judging from the damage. A fast wreck revealed a back room with a couple of folding chairs, a table piled with supplies, and a snoring man in an old army cot against the far wall. Ryan kicked the cot.
Wake up!
The man awakened and froze at the sight of the strangers. His hand darted for his belt and found the empty holster at his hip. His gaze flicked to the table, then back to the masked people standing with a wad of rags, swaddling their right hands.
Who the hell are you, Gleaves? What's with the bandages? You hurt? Burned?
Not important. Talk to us about the Baron and you can live.
What you gonna do? Hit me with your bad hands? Fuck this.
He rose off the bunk.
Hey, Sal! Sal!
Ryan moved closer.
Sal is dead. Shot through the head.
What? With what? Invisible blasters?
Our blasters are protected from the storm.
Yeah? You want to show me, punk?
No. Takes too long to wrap them.
The man formed a smile that held no amusement whatsoever.
Oh, of course.
And with that, he darted across the room toward a table covered with clothing and equipment. Ryan raised his shoebox.
Stop or die!
The man shoved an arm into the pile, and as he started to withdraw something, both companions fired. The sec man buckled under the double assault and fell sprawling to the floor.
Never considered the possibility he wouldn't believe us. Stoop.
Spotting an Uzi on the table, Christy checked it over to make sure it was a 9mm, and then slid the spare ammo clips in her bag for JB. Ryan slid his Panga into its sheath and took the Uzi himself.
Well, we can't uncover. It would take us forever to get the strips right again. Want to try and capture another one alive? Maybe we'll have better luck with the next guy.
Ryan awkwardly set the Uzi for full auto with one hand.
Don't believe in luck. Besides, we can't risk it. The Baron or a sec boss has got to notice that something is odd soon. And then it's showtime.
Moving to the front of the store, they took positions near the front door and watched the street and corner. Dust devils danced along the gutters, a steady stream of sand blowing past them. It was like looking at a river. All of a sudden, Christy spun on Ryan and stared at his face in frustration.
Naya, we are idiots!
What's wrong? Everything is going according to plan.
Oh, no, it's not. Your eye.
Ryan touched his good eye and then scowled under his mask.
You're right. None of them have patches. They'll spot me for a phony immediately.
Wait just a minute.
The redhead went into the back room, then came out and checked behind the counter.
I knew there had to be some in stock. Here.
Ryan took the item and unfolded them. Sunglasses. They would cut down his vision, but it was their best bet. Sliding them on, he tucked the ends under the wrappings and shook his head violently.
They're not coming off.
Good.
The minor problem resolved, Ryan peeled back the rags on his wrist and glanced at his cron.
Too long. They're taking too long.
Christy raised her shoebox.
Should I prime the pump?
No, use this Uzi. You shoot. I'll do the rest. I haven't seen any women guards yet.
Agreed.
Stepping outside, Christy fired a burst into the air, and Ryan yelled as if gut shot. Then the woman peppered the front of the bank with the rest of the clips, and they ducked back inside the store. Seconds later, armed men poured into the street by the dozens. Some hit the ground, while others spread out in a defensive pattern.
A lot more than we bargained for.
The more the better for this job. Listen.
They could overhear the animated conversation of the three nearest sec men outside.
What the hell is going on? Where are the sentries? Vance! Kaja, check the tunnel!
The soldiers inspected the area and returned just as fast.
They're all dead, Sarge. Shot and stabbed.
Ryan and Christy made eye contact.
Now?
Now.
The door to the liquor store swung open, and out came the two faux sec men with cloth covering their faces as protection from the storm.
Hey, you two! You see anything?
No, sir!
Then, a tremendous blast filled the alleyway. And sandbags cannonballed out, slamming into the stores across the street and smashing the windows.
Rockets!
The hysterical sec man started to fire wildly at the rooftops. A dozen more joined in, shooting at anything and everything. But their weapons jammed constantly, and frantic hands struggled to clear the clogged mechanisms. However, opening the breaches only made matters worse. With deadly calm, Christy and Ryan moved through the shouting crowd, their shoeboxes softly chugging. Sec men fell over, clutching their chest and bellies, blasters dropping. Suddenly, Captain Linderholm realized what was going on.
Those two aren't sec men! They're snipers! Vance, get on the roof and kill anybody you find!
Sir!
The sec man took a single step before he also fell. With the wind howling, another blast ripped apart the alleyway, spewing out chunks of vehicles, a flaming wheel rolling through the crowd of sec men. Stepping out of its way, Christy shot Linderholm in the throat to stop his commands. Killing four more soldiers, Ryan reached the bank and kicked open the door. There were only a few people inside, and behind a teller's cage was the youth from the platform in the bill. Only now, he was dressed in a clean black uniform, dripping with weapons. But it was his carriage and bearing that showed he was in charge, the new Baron Strickland. Their gazes locked for a moment. Registering shock, the teenager frowned and reached for his fancy blasters.
Goodbye, Leonard.
Ryan fired three times, but the bullet slammed to a stop in midair, directly before the startled teenager. a spider web of cracks radiating from each impact point. Ryan cursed and retreated outside fast. Fire blast. This was a bank, and the kid had been standing behind a sheet of bulletproof glass. His one chance to end this matter had permanently gone to hell. Only a heartbeat behind, Sekhmen burst out the door, and Ryan shot the ground at their feet. The buried charge went off, blowing them to pieces and showering burning gasoline across the front of the building. The desert winds fanned the flames, but instead of extinguishing the blaze, actually seemed to feed the fire with every gust. Retreating amid the enemy, Ryan remembered that this was a specialty of JB's, mixing thermite with a Molotov to create an unstoppable chem fire that lasted for minutes even underwater. Nothing but time could kill those flames. Just then, a section of the road exploded, not harming anyone, merely throwing sand at the sky. Everyone moved away from that location, and the street under them now erupted in a series of blasts. Pieces of bodies flying everywhere. Ryan could overhear the crazed shouts of rockets and landmines. At the same time, he observed various surviving Sekhmen dragging broken legs or clutching bleeding arms. The alley thundered again as lightning flashed, and Ryan and Christie moved through the shouting men, their weapons chugging steadily, bodies dropping in their wake like harvested wheat. A corporal standing too near realized what was happening and turned his blaster on the pair. He got off a hasty shot, missing Ryan completely and hitting one of his own men. The one-eyed man chilled the corporal and met with Christie on the far corner, away from the burning bank.
I've got 6 rounds.
I got 4.
Time to go.
Check.
Placing their last few shots on just officers, Ryan and Christie backed away from the Baron's army and paused to stand directly on a smooth patch of sand between a bare metal mailbox and hydrant. Adopting his fake Sekhmen persona, he motioned to the other guards.
Hey! The sniper ran this way!
Several caught the call and passed along the news to the others. Soon a crowd of the men was coming their way.
This way! Hurry!
As the Sekhmen got near, the companions took off fast at a run. Thinking they were chasing the sniper, a dozen Sekhmen charged and reached the smooth section of sand almost exactly as the big ticking bomb buried there detonated. The men on top of the explosive charge simply vanished, the thunderclap and fireball knocking the rest to the ground covered with flames. Shrieking, the human torches dashed about amid their brethren, setting others on fire, spreading terror until the troops started firing on one another in confusion. Dropping their stolen jackets, Ryan and Christie disappeared unobserved into the dying storm. Smashing his fist onto the plexiglass shield of the teller's cage didn't dislodge the jammed rounds, and Leonard savagely turned upon his troops.
Boxes! They used boxes! I saw it! Blasters inside boxes with strips of cloth to hold them in place.
Smart.
Corporal Jamal bandaged a wound in his arm. He had a good suspicion it was from his own men, but that was a matter for later. The Sekhmen had just gotten their butts kicked and were burning for revenge on the faceless enemy.
Jamal, what is the death toll?
64, my lord. Mostly officers, which leaves us 30.
Wounded?
Nothing serious. Only minor flesh wounds. The snipers killed damn near everybody they hit.
The troops murmured uneasily at that news.
Stack the dead. We'll bury them later. No Sekhmen go into the machine.
Yes, sir.
The young Baron crossed his arms and tried to radiate a positive attitude he didn't really feel.
What about the wags?
Gone. Along with our extra water and all of the fuel.
Well, we don't really need any fucking fuel without vehicles, do we, Captain?
Corporal, sir.
Not anymore.
The Baron walked among the men, randomly pointing to each one.
You, you're a corporal now. You are a sergeant. You are a corporal, and you are a lieutenant.
Beaming faces spread through the motley crowd, and the weary bodies sat upright, holding their bolt-action pieces with renewed determination.
Let's kick ass, sir.
Tolerantly, Leonard allowed the familiarity from the lower-class drone. Odd how quickly he was learning to think like his father, and consider them as merely workers, tools to be used and discarded, nothing more. And he wasn't the only one who thought along those lines.
Captain Jamal, you're in command now.
The man who had only been a private a few days ago had seen this coming, and wasn't thrilled by the battlefield promotion. The commanders of the Sekhmen had a bad habit of dying in the Strickland reign. Plus, the fact that this boy had no inkling of military rankings or strategies. He was a genius with accounting, but when it came to being a leader, he was sorely lacking. Jamal truly believed that Leonard would just go on naming new commanders until every last one of them were dead. But he wisely held his tongue, for now.
Thank you, Baron. May I suggest we stay here until the storm dies, and then we go home?
Leonard stared at the other man with a near-deranged expression.
What did you say?
Jamal sighed. With his wife and children still in Alphaville, he had to follow the little lunatic straight to hell if need be. Afterward would be another matter. Alphaville needed a strong Baron, but not another madman in charge. Then again, in battle, people died. Even Barons, sometimes.
I said we should attack immediately.
Absolutely!
Leonard pointed to the men he had just promoted.
You, and you! Rid this place apart, and find some boxes and rags. Corporal, you're the new quartermaster. Gather the weapons from outside and field strip the autofires until you have enough clean blasters for everybody.
We each get an autofire, sir?
Leonard took the Desert Eagle from his left holster and tossed it to Jamal.
Everybody! Then we go after this bitch and her one-eyed lover, and blow them to hell!
The sec men cheered and got to work with a fever. Jamal was checking the load on his huge blaster when Leonard's words finally sunk into his brain.
One eye? Did you say the man had one eye?
Yes. When that man tried to shoot me, his sunglasses slipped, and I saw he wore a patch on the left side.
Jamal immediately remembered his run-in with a man calling himself Finn, back when he triumphed over the much larger Crusher. So Finn had been one of the invaders the whole time, and he had blabbed all kinds of information about Strickland and Leonard to him. Best not to reveal that incident to the new Baron, or there'd be yet another promotion to Captain after Leonard shot him. Luckily, Leonard kept talking as if Jamal hadn't even commented.
Oh, yes. And one more thing, Captain.
Leonard brushed his hands across the plexiglass.
Sir?
Send some men to the supermarket and see if we have any wolves still alive. We'll use the beasts to track this pair to their bolt hole and take the battle to them this time.
Do you still want the redhead alive, sir?
The young Baron didn't hesitate.
No. No prisoners. Kill them both on sight.
Resembling freshly unearthed mummies, Ryan and Christy slipped into the government building, and Doc closed the heavy glass door tightly, sliding the wedge of wood under the jamb to help it stay firmly in position. Overhead, the storm was noticeably weaker. Thunder rumbled again, but the lag between noise and lightning was increasing. The Deathlands Tempest was almost finished.
How's Dean? Can we leave yet?
Doc offered him a canteen.
I do not know, sir. Dr. Wyeth is spoon-feeding him broth, and most of it stays down.
Most? That doesn't sound good.
Ryan took a healthy swig of the tepid water, then handed the canteen to Christy. Yanking down her mask, she accepted it and took a long pull while stripping off the cloth holding the shoebox on her arm.
Phew! Thanks.
You seem undamaged. May I assume the mission was a success?
Hell yeah.
Ryan removed the box from around his blaster and flexed his stiff fingers.
Excellent.
Doc returned to watching the street outside as the man and woman unwound the intertwined rags covering them before reaching for their clothes. Feeling pounds lighter, they climbed over the barricade of file cabinets and started downstairs. When J.B. saw them, he rose from his chair, a napkin tied around his throat, and an open MRE envelope in his hand.
Any problems?
Went like clockwork.
Christy dropped a stack of ammo clips on a table.
Found these for you.
Thanks.
Hey, is that spaghetti?
The armorer blinked at the odd question and checked the foil package in his hand.
No, corned beef hash. Want some?
Yeah.
Maneuvering through the sea of tables, Ryan reached the bedsheet tent and scratched on the cloth. Mildred came out, stooping to clear the fold.
You're back. I thought I heard voices. Any damage that needs mending?
Just bruised and tired. How's Dean?
The physician glanced backward.
Stable, nothing more. I've done everything possible. It's a waiting game now.
Calder took her shoulder and squeezed gently in understanding. She shrugged, apologizing for not being able to do more.
How many dead?
The albino teen was lying on a crude bed of sofa cushions with his boots off, an arm draped over his face to keep out the lantern light. The first rule of surviving combat, after not getting shot, was to always grab as much sleep as possible.
30 or so.
Ryan went to a punch bowl full of water and washed his hands and face. Christy joined him, and the water was almost black when they finished.
Any chance you were followed?
JB tilted his head to listen for any noises outside, but only heard the soft moan of the desert wind and Doc humming that damn Caruso opera song again.
They were too busy dying to worry about us much. We hadn't waited at a couple of locations. Never saw a soul.
Besides, we did a loop into the desert twice. Went over a few walls and through that burnt-out high school. Nobody could follow that trail.
Unless they have dogs.
Lowering his arm, Jack sat up and frowned.
Oh, wolves.
Those were trained wolves. And we never met the females of the pack.
Christy instinctively went for her blaster.
Think any are still around?
Sure as hell hope not.
Ryan took a pencil stub from a pocket and drew a map of the ruins on the smooth stone floor.
Just in case, we better concoct a battle plan. We've got them scared, but when the sky clears, the Baron and his men will come boiling out of that bank hot for revenge.
We can set up an ambush. Certainly enough locations in these ruins for us to stage one hell of a firefight.
Jack frowned, lacing his shoes.
30-5? Bad odds.
JB disposed of the remains of his meal.
Agreed. So how do we change them?
With explosives, JB knew no master, but strategy was Ryan's field of expertise. He stabbed a finger at the crude map.
Okay. We're here, the Baron's there. So we send out Jack and the Hummer to swing past them real slow, dribbling oil out of a puncture can.
Breadcrumbs.
Exactly. You leak a trail away from us and into the desert dunes.
These guys are pretty smart. Do you really think they'll fall for that old trick?
Then her expression changed.
Oh, I see. They're not supposed to believe.
Right. But the Baron will still have to check it out anyway, just in case. I estimate he'll send 10, maybe half his men, after Jack, to double-check.
I'm bait, but not trap. Lure away, driving slow. Hurry back.
Mildred massaged the back of her neck.
Could buy us another day, and hours count at this point. Still leaves the rest for us.
I've done the best I can with this building. It's tight, but I sure don't want to have a major fight here.
Not here. We'll make it a fallback.
We can't move the boy.
Adjusting his eye patch, Ryan frowned.
Not that kind of a fallback. There's a ton of weapons in the pawn shop. We choose a good location and arm it with the useless blasters. Then mine the place with booby traps. Jam the barrels of the blasters so they explode.
Yeah, just might work.
JB glanced at the kitchen he had converted into a weapons lab. Bottles were stacked everywhere, several of them bubbling away softly, steadily building pressure that would soon demand to be released.
I got some stuff brewing that will ace the bunch of them if we can gather them in one tight area.
Poison gas?
Not quite, but close.
Fuses?
Nope. Just break the glass and the chems mix.
Good. Bastard fuses give away too much.
Check.
Sounds okay. It's us or them, so you know my vote.
Christy pursed her lips, then nodded.
Let's do it.
Ryan looked at the barbed wire and curtains of the makeshift roof.
Anybody got a better idea, speak now. From the sound of the wind and thunder, the storm is almost gone, so we have to move fast.
There was no dissent.
Okay, we hit him hard and fast. Don't give the Baron a chance to plan or regroup. Keep him off balance. The Sec men outnumber us, but we have automatic weapons in the Hummer. Firepower and mobility.
A knife appeared from out of nowhere in Jack's hand, spun on its pommel in his palm, then was slid smoothly back into his sleeve.
Dead meat.
Off in a corner by itself, the string from upstairs jerked, making a spoon in a glass tinkle like a tiny bell. The sound startled everyone. Slowly at first, then gathering speed, Ryan started across the basement to tug back to see if it was a warning, or just Doc asking for a piss break, when there came the stitching zip of the HKG-12 from overhead, followed by screams and the raging snarl of wolves. They all drew their blasters.
Dark Knight, they found us!
Already?
Weapons out, Ryan and Jack were heading for the door to the stairwell, with JB close behind. Grabbing his bag of munitions, JB stopped at the stairs and turned.
Hey, Millie, just in case.
He tossed over the M4000 shotgun. The physician nodded, then reached into a pocket and tossed him a grin.
It's the last one. Don't miss, John.
JB tucked it away, threw her a smile, and took off at a run. Bursting out of the stairwell, the companions found Doc behind the reception desk, firing the Heckler and Koch at a swarm of Sec men climbing over the barricade of file cabinets. Ryan and the others opened fire, and the invaders fell back, screaming and cursing. Two bleeding bodies stayed where they were, draped motionless on the metal banks. Advancing to the barricade, Ryan rested his blaster on top of a cabinet between the dead men. They would give good cover.
Bowie, fire at the windows on my mark.
Now!
A hailstorm of lead shattered the remaining panes of snowy glass, exposing 30 sec men, armed with autofires, standing in the sandy street.
Kill them!
Ryan rode the bucking Steyr SSG-70 as he worked the bolt and fired steadily, their bodies dancing under the impacts. 6 sec men fell to the ground before the rest could scurry away. A snarling wolf leaped on top of the cabinets, and Jack shot it in the face with his .357 Colt Python, the muzzle flash igniting the fur as the head exploded and the body tumbled off. In seconds, the street before their building was clear of live targets. As Ryan shoved in a fresh clip, he scowled at the garage directly across from them, where the Hummer was hidden. So bloody close, but it might as well be on the moon for all the good it could do them now.
Doc, cover fire from the roof and watch for jumpers. Christy, take the first floor in case somebody gets past us or tries a window.
On it.
Godspeed all.
As the pair disappeared into the shadowy interior of the pre-dark building, there came the sound of running boots, and a mob of yelling sec men charged into view, carrying sheets of glass before them as shields. The companions coolly opened fire, but the rounds simply knocked the men back, becoming embedded in the soft, clear material.
What the? Shitfire! It's that plexiglass from the bank!
Heartened by their apparent invulnerability, the troops rallied and charged again, firing their automatics around the sides of the resilient plastic.
Shoes!
The companions concentrated on the shuffling boots of the sec men. Leather toes erupted, spraying blood. A man fell and was trampled by the others. Another dropped, losing the shield, and his exposed comrades died. Then the rest were inside the building, shouting and whooping like madmen. Maintaining steady fire, the companions fell back to the receptionist desk as the sec force tried to shove aside the cabinets. But filled with books and with every handle lashed together with spare barbed wire, the barrier was immovable.
Ren!
Ryan dropped the rifle and drew his hand blaster, working the slide to chamber around. Holding the Uzi with both hands, Bibby carefully aimed at the ceiling on the other side of the barrier.
No need for that yet.
And JB fired. The ceiling tiles broke apart, displaying a dozen plastic bottles tied to the rafters. Riddled with bullets, the containers poured out their pale blue contents onto the sec men. Shrieking with pain, the horrified men dropped their weapons and shields, beating insanely at their melting flesh, white bones and pulsating organs already in plain view. Advancing, the companions slaughtered the dissolving victims and caught a couple of unhurt men trying to leave the hellish lobby. 2 shots, and the cowards fell face first into the sizzling puddles.
What was that? Acid rainwater?
The pungent smell was horrific, beyond description, and his nose was running and eye-watering because of it. Moving to a safe distance, JB grinned without humor.
Liquid drain cleaner. Spiced with a little of my brew. I found a whole carton in the janitor's closet. Great stuff. They won't hit here again for a while.
Got more?
Jack snapped off a shot at a dashing wolf and missed. He cracked the cylinder, dropped the brass, and reloaded.
I'm afraid not. Got a bunch of stuff cooking downstairs, but it's not ready. And this is it for traps. We're on our own now.
While the Baron's troops peppered the defenders with steady blaster fire, a sec man sneaking along the wall of the pawn shop lurched forward and hurled himself at a ground floor window of the government building. The glass shattered and he fell back, bleeding from a dozen spots. The nails sticking through the wooden boards covering the inside of the window now dripped with his blood. Then, from the opposite side of the building, another man stumbled into view, an eye dangling on his cheek, blood pumping from his wounds with every heartbeat. In an alleyway between a paint store and a ramshackle garage, Leonard stood on a box behind a metal trash bin and watched the battle. The young Baron smiled as his men charged the building again, then frowned as they retreated, clothes smoking, faces bleeding, and with more bodies lying on the ground. He had no idea if they were killing any of the people inside the building, but his men were being slaughtered. He was already down to 20 men in a matter of minutes. Who were these people? The teenager turned to the men beside him.
Enough of this! We tried it your way, Jamal, but this is going nowhere. Burn them out!
For the 10th time in an hour, the captain patiently explained the situation.
My lord, this is the dry season. We could lose the whole city, and the flames could even spread to the ville. The river has caught fire before.
Damn the river, damn the ville, and damn you! I want those people dead! You understand? Dead at any cost!
Touching the blaster on his belt, Jamal debated killing the teenager right here, and claiming it was a chance shot from the defenders. However, those thoughts disappeared as he noticed Leonard clutching his head, as if in great pain. All of a sudden, the boy glanced at him, and his expression reminded Jamal of the innocent pre-Baron Leonard, with his facts, figures, and scribbled notes on paper. Then, just as quickly as it appeared, the expression was gone, replaced with the usual lunatic, overbearing posturing of Baron Leonard Strickland. Jamal snapped a salute.
Yes, my lord. Of course. At once, Baron.
The boy seemed to notice a difference in the Sec man, and then dismissed it, attributing the change to combat. Killing made some men uneasy. Personally, he was starting to enjoy it immensely.
How many Molotov cocktails do we have?
Only the 6, my lord. Lots more bottles, but no more fuel. This is every drop that survived the alley fire.
More than enough. Take your strongest men and firebomb the front door and roof simultaneously. Let's see them stop that! Ha!
Leonard scoffed in triumph, but Jamal had had enough.
If this fails, sir, will we leave?
What did you say?
Leave. Depart. Go. We're getting slaughtered and for no reason!
The teenager stared.
Are you mad? They killed my father!
After he kidnapped and almost raped that poor woman.
Jamal knew there was no turning back now.
The crazy old bastard had it coming for years. Served him right!
Leonard grabbed his blaster and pointed it at Jamal, looking like he was ready to pull the trigger. Oh well, it was about time for a new head sec man anyway. He'd put in his 4 hours or so at the job. Loon will probably put some non-com in charge for all he knew. Jamal just wished he had had the chance to say goodbye to his family. Instead, Leonard just looked at him funny, and then released the weapon.
Captain, you're relieved of rank. You will lead the troops in the next rush on the building. Take his blasters.
The remaining sec men closed on the man, and under the muzzles of their blasters, he was stripped of weapons.
Haven't got the guts to shoot me here, huh? Insubordination is a death sentence, and you know it.
Jamal knew he should keep his mouth shut, but something weird was going on here. Calmly, the youth returned to watching the losing battle.
Do as you are told, or your children will beg for the mercy of the machine.
Sporadic blaster fire continued from the building, and the sec men shot back from behind mailboxes, vending machines, and inside the paint store. Jamal pressed his luck further. Perhaps the other men would also notice the Baron's odd behavior.
How did we ever let you get in charge? What the fuck were we thinking? You're worse than Gunther!
Leonard looked at him and smiled. It was as passionless as his words.
I'll take that as a compliment. Now go die.
Jamal suddenly remembered the incident with the wine. It was now or never.
So this is how you stay on the good side of the troops?
Now he was getting somewhere. The other sec men finally started scratching their heads and looking at the Baron with puzzled glances. It was one thing to try to carry on the legacy of the previous Baron. It was another thing entirely to act like the deceased man in virtually every way, from movements to inflections of words to the words themselves. Leonard simply stared at him again with that off-kilter expression, like he was some kind of puppet. Then, like before, he snapped out of it.
You there, Private.
Leonard gestured to the nearby man, crossing his arms and posing as if on display in the ville, and not in the middle of a firefight. The sec man turned slowly.
Sir?
You're in charge now. Firebomb that rad-blasted pit into rubble!
The sec man looked over at Jamal, who nodded. The former private then saluted the Baron. At least he was right in his assumption. The lowest of the low just became the top man in the chain of command. Jamal chuckled to himself, but he still needed to know what was wrong with Leonard, if he was going to put an end to all this senseless bloodshed.
Yes, sir.
Shouting orders over the blaster fire, the new captain directed men to take positions, and 6 Molotov cocktails soared into the air. 2 of the bottles streaked right into the open front of the building, spreading fire across the metal cabinets. The other 4 arched high, going for the rooftop. Doc came to attention as he saw the Molotovs soaring through the cloudy sky. As he grabbed the blaster with both hands, the old man took careful aim and fired the Lama again and again. The first shot missed completely, so did the second, but the 3rd and the 4th hit. 2 of the bottles burst in midair, forming burning blossoms that rained harmlessly to the ground. The 3rd Molotov impacted dangerously near Doc, and he dragged himself away, the gasoline spreading across the concrete, but finding no pursuit to feed the hungry flames. The fourth hit the skylight and shattered, raining fire and glass into the building. The burning debris landed on the curtains and barbed wire of the third floor. Dry as dust, the pre-dark cloth instantly ignited, and the interior of the structure was harshly illuminated with hellish light. Soon, red-hot embers floated downward, drifting harmlessly onto the terrazzo floors and elevator cage. But several reached the first floor. Now, only yards away from the basement, tendrils of smoke rose from the hot flakes on the carpeting, tiny glowing specks that pulsed with every breeze as if living things. Grabbing the fire extinguisher from the wall niche, Christie sprayed carbon dioxide foam over the whole expanse of the material. The canister died quickly, but all of the hot spots were quenched. However, more and more embers were drifting downward. Already, the woman could see huge sections of bare wire above, the strands snapping from the accumulated heat. The next Molotov would drop through, falling straight to the basement, and she had nothing but blasters to stop the advance of the deadly fire. She had never felt as helpless as she did just then. To her surprise, an odd sensation came over her. It felt the same as when she first laid eyes on Baron Gunther Strickland. But he was dead, wasn't he? Why was she feeling this way?
They're not trying to capture us anymore.
Thick clouds of smoke blew in over the barricade. It reeked of the drain cleaner, and Ryan tried his best not to breathe any of the bluish smoke directly. He had a pretty good idea what it would do to his lungs.
How about we make a run for it? Try and lure them to the library and set the muties free.
Too far.
Jack slapped shut the cylinder of his reloaded blaster. The temperature was rising fast from the two fires. Ryan wiped the sweat off his brow with a sleeve and glanced around the building, counting their options. They were low on ammo, with no more bombs, missiles, or grenades. The building was on fire, and surrounded by the enemy, who wouldn't consider their surrender. The stairs were clear. They could reach the roof easily and jump to the pawn shop, but then what? There was no way across that street without the sec men seeing them, and night was hours away.
Can't sit here.
Jack brushed an ember off his sleeve. The crackling of the fire was getting louder, as the flames found new fuel in the floor tiles and wall paneling.
What do you want to do, charge them?
Jack hawked and spat to clear his throat.
Evident surprise.
Sure as shit would surprise me.
Ryan abruptly cut into their conversation.
JB, when you said that you didn't have anything else ready, what exactly did you mean by that?
The armorer took a moment to mentally shift gears.
You mean my concoctions downstairs? Well, I have some poison gas bombs cooking, but they're still green. Wouldn't make a kitten ill. Tomorrow, they'll be as lethal as a nuke.
Tomorrow isn't today. Would they smoke much?
You mean now? Sure, but it's just smoke.
Then Jack and JB grinned simultaneously as they sidestepped some embers.
Once fine, twice shy.
They'll think it's another sandstorm gag. Us attacking under cover of the smoke.
Let's do it. The trio started for the stairs. Minutes passed as Leonard watched the fire spread throughout the building, a thick plume of smoke rising into the sky. Then he gasped as a barrage of glass bottles came hurtling from the roof to loudly crash on the street. He flinched, expecting gouts of flame from Molotovs to erupt at each impact. But instead, volumes of grayish-green smoke flowed from the puddles. Billowing clouds of smoke filled the street, flooding into the alleyway and stores. Suddenly, a volley of blaster fire erupted from the defenders. In horror, the young Baron realized it was a deadly repeat of the fight at the bank. Visibility dropped to zero, and the sec men started to pull back, unwilling to chance contact with the dense smoke.
Attack! Attack now, you stinking cowards!
The desert breeze was already starting to thin the chem fog, and so the sec men slowly began to advance into the dark clouds, disappearing from view. Drawing his own blaster, the Baron waited impatiently for the sounds of combat to renew, when somebody coughed a few more times in the alleyway behind him.
Shut up, fools! It's only smoke!
But then, something hot and hard pressed painfully against the back of his head.
Freeze! Tell your men to stop attacking and start shoveling sand.
Ryan grabbed a fistful of red hair to hold the youth motionless.
What?
To put out the fire!
Breathing hard, Leonard glanced down and through the thinning clouds of smoke. He could see the still forms of his bodyguards lying on the ground, with most of their heads missing.
Who the hell are you?
Ryan shook the teenager hard.
Doesn't matter. Give the order to your men, or I'll blow your fucking brains out.
I don't think so.
Leonard sensed a weakness to exploit.
You need my men, so I stay alive. But with the fire and your bitch trapped in there...
Ryan wasted a live round, jacking the slide, so the noise would startle the man.
Last chance.
The teenager shook with restrained fury.
And then I die anyway. Fuck you. Go ahead. Kill me!
A thunderous report shook the alleyway, and Leonard jerked free of Ryan's startled grip. Stumbling off his box, the teenager staggered against a garbage bin and was about to run off, when from out of the smoke strode Christy Roth.
What the hell? What are you doing here?
It's all right, Ryan. It is all right, isn't it, Leonard?
Ryan thought she had lost all her senses when she walked up and placed her hand on the Baron's face. Leonard Strickland looked at the redhead as if he were seeing her for the first time. Ryan noticed the change in him as well. It was almost as if in a matter of seconds, Leonard turned from a raving psychopath into a frightened little boy.
I don't understand. Who are you? What are you doing to me?
I'm trying to help you, Leonard. Now you need to listen to me very closely so you know I am speaking the truth. I know this will come as a shock to you, but your adoptive father was just using you until he could find another female like himself to produce a true offspring.
He was using me?
Yes, Leonard. He feared he would never be able to have a real son, so he chose you because of your hair color to be his adopted son. He manipulated your mind to conform to his way of thinking, both with his words and with his thoughts.
His thoughts?
Gunther Strickland was a mutie, just like I am a mutie. But not the same as those horrible bat creatures outside the city. We are human beings with heightened senses and powers. Unfortunately, Strickland used his abilities to manipulate you and make the rest of the Ville fear him. And he sacrificed many females trying to find another of his kind. I was drawn to you because I could feel him inside of you. All the years he pretended to be a loving parent to you, he was just preparing you to be a clone of himself so that he could keep his precious Ville under control. I'm so sorry for what he did to you. All your negative thoughts, your attempts at dictatorship, your urges to kill, they all came from him. Fortunately, he died before he could fully integrate his mind into yours. That's why you still feel conflicted at times. But I can see who you really are deep inside. I can bring that good person back, if you want him.
The fighting beyond had become eerily silent as the remaining soldiers stopped their fighting and dropped their weapons. They all saw what was happening, but didn't know how to respond. For his part, Leonard had calmed as well, but uncertainty still showed on his face.
Quickly, Leonard. Your people and your city are suffering. They need you. Not as Baron Leonard Strickland, but as simply Leonard. The intelligent, kind young man who they can look up to with pride instead of fear.
The lady's right, Leo.
Jamal appeared next to Leonard and smiled.
Remember, you helped build those greenhouses to provide food for all the citizens.
He decided that now probably wouldn't be a good time to reveal to Leonard that the fertilizer for those greenhouses came from those people unfortunate enough to be thrown into the machine when they defied the previous Baron. The kid was going through enough, just learning that he was only his adoptive father's puppet.
And you're the brain in the barracks, remember?
Leonard had heard this nickname before, but only now did he understand that Jamal was using it as a term of endearment, not ridicule.
Yes. Yes. I want Leonard back.
Christy smiled.
JB and the others can come out now. The battle is over.
You, guard, order your men to put out the fire.
The dark-skinned man swung about, motioned for the surrounding soldiers to do as the stranger asked. The thinning smoke exposed a group of more sec men on the sidewalk and the burning building across the street. Grips on weapons were shifted as the men waited for a sign of what was happening.
Whatever you say, Finn.
The one-eyed man narrowed his gaze as recognition slowly came to him of this man's identity.
Huh. You're that man I met who helped me get out of that scuffle the other day. I thought you were going to be a private.
It's Captain now, actually.
Well, Captain, you'd better start ordering the rest of your troops to stoke that blaze, or you'll have nothing left to guard.
Jamal nodded and gave the order.
Bucket Brigade! You, and you, get some metal pails from the paint store. The rest of you glebes form a line from the street and start throwing like you mean it.
Then he turned back to Ryan.
Seeing as how I inadvertently helped you out by giving you information about this place and the Barons, I think you owe me some information in return.
What do you want to know?
Well, teaching us how to defend ourselves against those muties who keep threatening us would be a start. And how you were able to knock off all our guards. You are an incredible warrior, Finn.
Ryan smiled at the man.
Well, for a start, the name's Ryan.
Hey, Dad?
Everybody turned. The rest of the companions stumbled out of the pawn shop, Dean wrapped in a blanket and tenderly cradled in Mildred's arms. The boy blinked in the dim daylight.
Hot pipe! What's going on?
A week later, dust devils danced along the sandy street in front of the pawn shop as the companions loaded Dean into the rear cargo area of the Hummer. The desert winds were starting to increase once more, and they wanted to leave before the next storm arrived. Next door, the government building was gone, just another blackened hole in the ground like the skyscraper. Mildred tucked blankets tighter around the boy.
You okay? Headache. Did I really fall through the skylight? Don't remember.
Sliding behind the steering wheel, Ryan glanced at the physician in concern.
A common reaction to head traumas. Nothing to worry about.
Damn straight you did. Fell four stories. Good thing you landed on your head.
What's that smell?
Food. Bushels of food. Corn, tomatoes, beans, lots of taters.
Doc corrected the young man as he wiggled into the back seat. A canvas sack on his lap.
The word is potato.
You peel, you name.
I see your point, young Jack. Taters it is.
The albino teen grunted in victory. Curiously, Dean reached out to touch one of the baskets stacked nearby. It was made of reed and seemed filled with live lizards.
And there's meat, too. But where did it come from?
JB snuggled next to Mildred.
We caught the lizards. It's easy once you know how.
And we traded with the new Baron for the vegetables.
Christy climbed into the passenger seat.
What did you trade? Our blasters?
Actually, no. Ryan started the engine. He had lots of those. We traded with something he didn't have and wanted very much. JB's formula for smoke bombs.
Knowledge is power.
So do you think Leonard will be okay, Ryan?
He'll be fine. He doesn't have much aptitude for leadership, but he's a smart kid who can get things done. And Captain Jamal can take care of the community's defense with the info I gave him. With Jamal in charge of the Ville security, Leonard can pursue other issues, such as finding better ways of keeping the greenhouses running. Ryan eased off the brake and slipped the wag into gear.
So, what about the mutie that attacked me? Is it dead? Who runs that Ville?
Mildred pressed a finger to his lips.
Enough sleep. We're going to the redoubt for a while, let you get your rest and your strength back. Tell you all about it there.
Christy stared at the cloudy sky.
All that adventure, and we still have no idea where we are.
The locals call the ruins Zero City. A bastardization of the military term Ground Zero, I would assume.
Ryan eased off the clutch and pulled away from the curb.
Yeah, maybe after a couple of years, when things calm down, we'll come back and ask them about it.
Lying atop an old horse blanket spread on the white sand beach before the azure ocean, Harold felt himself rising again from the electric touch of Laura's naked breast on his chest. But his wife was asleep, and the man forced his passion to cool. There had been a lot of sec men in the gaudy house that night, but oddly, nobody attacked when he appeared with his blasters. They simply watched as he took the young woman from her bed and departed. All that preparation for nothing. Carrying her in his arms, he had raced through the sewers and taken a boat he had built himself down the dirty river to the sea. There he rode for hours until finally reaching a small island where nobody else lived. Deep in the lush greenery was a hut built by the old Baron, the cellar full of food, ammo, and tools. His secret escape place was now their honeymoon oasis. That night, under the stars, they kissed like adults and did many other wonderful things. As he gazed at the sleeping woman, Harold's heart swelled with love for his tiny bride. The naked Goliath gently stroked her long flowing hair, so soft to the touch of his massive scarred hands. He didn't care about her many scars. She was his angel, and nobody would ever harm her again. Shifting position in her sleep, Laura pressed warmly against the man and reached out to stroke his misshapen face with fingers as gentle as a prayer in church. A single heartfelt tear flowed down his ravaged cheek, and the deformed man closed his eyes in complete contentment. Lost in reverie, Harold fell asleep with a smile, happily dreaming about how fine and strong their many children would be.